The Skull in the Wood, written by Sandra Greaves and read by Ryan Watson, Catherine Press, and Tina Waller.
Chapter 1. 11:47. Already the train was slowing into Exeter Station, and my options were dwindling to a big fat nothing. As the platform approached, I wondered for the millionth time if I'd made a huge mistake in coming here. Uncle Jack hadn't sounded exactly welcoming on the phone. But I'd been so determined to get away from Mum and Paul the four-eyed pillock that I hadn't let it worry me. Now was another matter. I hoped I'd imagined the coldness in his voice when I said I'd needed somewhere to stay. Forget butterflies in my stomach. They'd turned into giant carnivorous moths. For a second or two, I toyed with the idea of going back to London. Then I steeled myself, heaved my bag onto my shoulder, and stepped out of the train. It was only till the end of half term, a week and a bit. I could manage that, couldn't I? Though to hear Mum panicking, you'd think I was heading into unmapped jungle. She couldn't believe it when I'd announced the day before that I'd rung Uncle Jack and was going there whether she liked it or not. But what else could I do? With Dad off sailing, my bolt hole had disappeared. There was no way I was staying in our house with Paul acting as if he owned it. I had to get as far away as possible, and Uncle Jack's was the only place left to escape to. All my friends are off with their parents doing fun things for the holiday. You know, like normal families do. I stared up at the clock in the station. Was anyone coming? 12.5 minutes after the train had left, Uncle Jack finally rocked up, looking hassled.
"Goodness, there you are, Matthew,"
he said in a sharp voice, as if it was me who was late, not him. He peered at me from under windswept grey hair that matched his grey beard. He looked pretty much how I remembered him, even though it was ages since I'd seen him last. It dawned on me that I scarcely knew him.
"It is Matthew, isn't it?"
he said.
"Gone quiet, have you? What are you now, 13? That's right, isn't it? A year older than Tilda."
I mumbled a hello, and that seemed to be enough for him. He didn't ask me how I was. As he led me over to his clapped-out Land Rover, he glanced at his watch. It was obvious he had better things to do than look after me. And I'd just about forced him to take me in. What had I been thinking of? My armpits prickled with embarrassment.
"Your mum all right, then?"
he asked suddenly, as we climbed into the Land Rover.
"Suppose so,"
I said, and lapsed into silence. I didn't mean to be rude, but Uncle Jack didn't seem to notice. He switched on the radio and got on with the driving. At least he had the decency not to bring up why I was here. And then, just as I was beginning to calm down, we were on the moor. Imagine a wilderness that goes on and on and on, acre after acre of desolate landscape covered in dead bracken. That was Dartmoor. It could easily win first prize as the most boring place in the universe. And I'd chosen to come here, insisted on it. Only now, the thought of being stuck here for more than a day, no, more than half an hour, was doing my head in. And it was all Paul's fault. But anything had to be better than home. I'd been here before, just not for a very long time, not since way before Auntie Rose died. I didn't remember much of it. The farm, obviously, and the cows and the sheep. A muddy walk into the depths of nowhere that ended with Mum and Auntie Rose having an argument. It was strange that we'd hardly ever visited, especially with Dad keeping a boat on the river at Dartmouth, only 30 miles away. And ever since Auntie Rose died, I hadn't set eyes on Uncle Jack, or my cousins, Tilda and Kitty. Though to tell the truth, I know why. Mum didn't get on with her sister, though she doesn't talk about it. And she really, really hates Dartmoor, even though she grew up here. She says it gives her the creeps. We passed a white building, the first sign of civilization I'd seen in a while. From behind its walls rose a storm of frenzied barking, and I jumped.